Welcome everyone on the call. I see that we also have at least two new members, as far as I can judge from the list of participants. Welcome. Welcome everyone. And as you can see, our first agenda item is new members. I'll try to briefly introduce the group and tell you what we do. We are the Guidelines Review Committee, as you apparently know, since you applied to be new members. Our task is to see everything that we at the CCNSO have and all those internal documents. The idea is that we go through the documents, we see what needs to be updated, which cases probably some documents are outdated and need to be rewritten to match our current practice. Of course, we also try to make them easier to read for non-native speakers. I see wonderful. I can hear birds singing, and it's so great, especially because we have to work hard. And you know these, probably birds are new members. Anyway,
That was me, so I
that was. Oh, that I thought those were birds, not you. I never heard you singing like that, but.
I'll keep it on there. You keep hearing the birds.
Yeah, that sounded great. It's very demotivating, but it's really very great. Okay, so going back to what we do, so we try to make them translate documents into plain English to make them easier to read for non-native speakers. We also have our own wiki space. I cannot say it's heavily used. Some pages have been viewed a couple of times only because we have counters there. We know everything. Nevertheless, we have we try at least to have all the documents that we have there in wiki space. Now, since I think a little bit more than a year ago, we moved to working with Google Docs, which makes it probably a little bit more difficult to share various stages of draft with the team and the community. Probably we'll have to figure something out how to make sure that we still can use our wiki space efficiently. Okay, that's about the group. As you can see, we have representatives from many different CCTLDs. Again, glad to see new people joining because we always need a new blood and a fresh look at things. The rest of us, we have worked and reread the document so many times that probably we do not see some issues with them anymore. So it's always great to have new people who can add new perspective to the thing and, of course, share the workload. Okay, so that's about us. Now, it would be really great to hear a little bit from you guys. So I see Christina and Sean. Would you like to say a couple of words about yourself and then also what do you expect from the group and maybe what information you need to catch up with the rest of us? And then we also say what you think be your contribution to the group. May I start with any of you? Christina, for example.
Hello, everyone.
Christina.
Hello.
I'm from Armenia. Almost 8 or 9 years I'm working with in area of cctld.am and .hi. I really appreciate what doing the guideline rapid committee, but the thing is that I'm new and I want to understand everything in details. So I need help every one of you to understand and then to start a contribution. So what concerns my what's up, Katarina? I'm sorry about what I can talk. I have to talk.
No, that's fine. If you're done, then done. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you and welcome. Thank you and welcome. Sean?
Hi, I've been involved with the VITLB for about 20 years now, give or take. My interest in being involved in the ICANN meetings and this group goes to continuity for me. We've been involved in a lot of stuff over the years, and as we're transitioning through, I felt it was my time to step up from RTLD. And so I'm here. I'll be on a learning curve a little bit as I go through all the documentation, and I hope to contribute in a meaningful way.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And I see that meanwhile, Sveta has joined as well. So Svetlana, would you share with us your interest in joining this group, and what do you expect from the group, and how could you, are you willing to contribute?
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. Hello, everyone. I'm glad to see you every in this meeting. It's my first meeting with this group. I read documents that Yoko sent me about previous meeting and understand that we need to make this document more smooth, more correct, more understandable for people who want to participate in next meetings and have funding for ICANN meeting.
Yeah,
unfortunately, I don't know what was in previous meeting and I only saw the results of your work, but I can't understand what can I do for make better this document. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks a lot. That's a good summary. I probably also should mention that, as you may know, now we're stepping into this phase of CCNSO review. That's something that's organizational review mandated by the bylaws. And GRC is also taking active part in this review. It's independent review done by independent reviewer, but there's a working party comprised of members from the CCNSO side, and this working party will actively collaborate with these independent reviewers once they are selected. So if you're interested in participating in the CCNSO review, then also please let us know. I mean the new members, because many of the old members, I will use the word old members, already take part in this working party. Okay, so with that, probably let's move forward to our next agenda item. That's on travel funding. Svetlana already mentioned the document. So this is just a brief history for those of you who are new to the group. So we reviewed the current guideline. You can find it on the CCNSO website. So we reviewed it and rewrote according to our guidelines and our ideas, and then submitted it to the CCNSO Council, and we got back some feedback and heavily edited document. As we decided last time during our last call, so Jokke will Jokke reviewed the proposed wording and prepared the summary and put the red line version in Google Doc. So Jokke, I'll give floor to you for more information on your discoveries. Let's see. Yep, Jokke.
Yeah, thank you very much, Katrina. Let me just open the document. So I'll pass the link as well in the chat. So there is a red line version that was produced, which highlights actually the comments or the changes that have been made in this edited version by the by this council member that made the edits. So in the redlined version, you will be able to see that there are really extensive changes. Some indeed improve the readability of the document. The first change that you will be able to see is regarding the title even. So we decided to rephrase the word funding with support. That or I haven't decided. That was a proposal, and that actually makes sense because also the ICANN travel support documents refer to support and not to funding. In the introduction, there is now a reference to the ICANN bylaws, and that the CCNSO travel support should actually fund those that actively contribute towards the work of the CCNSO and the broader CCTLD community. Purpose of the guideline was remained unchanged. Then regarding the chapter number 3, there are really extensive changes because in the current version or in the version that was proposed to the council, we refer to a fixed number of slots, which with the caveat that this fixed number might change from year to year because the number of slots are being defined by the ICANN budget. In the proposed changes, there is reference no longer to a specific amount of slots that are available, but rather to a certain percentage that should go to the CCNSO council members and a certain percentage that should go to the broader community. The percentage is 70 that was proposed by this council member is 75% goes to the council and at least 20% goes to the broader community. If we move to chapter number 4, it talks about a committee, how it is made up, and that the committee shall have 4 members. So that is what is currently already the case. The fact that there is no term extension was removed somewhere, if I remember well. Maybe this was mentioned in 4.2 in where we talk about the terms of service. The role of the committee is indeed to make sure that there is a simple mechanism that allows for community members to apply for travel support, and also to make sure that the applicants are being evaluated against a fixed amount of criteria. There are considerable changes to chapter number 5 when we talk about the CCNSO council members. As mentioned before, there was a proposal that 75% of the available slots goes to the councillors and at least 2 slots. It is mentioned here in the suggested changes in 5.1 goes to the broader community. A little bit later in the document, there is no longer reference to 2 slots, but then there is reference to 20% of the available slots. So we need to make sure that there is a consistency there if we talk about percentages of numbers or whatever has been decided. The criteria, there are no changes to the suggested criteria. However, in 5.2, since we talk about the broader CCTLD community, suggested was to remove the CCNSO council members as one of the selection criteria. since they would have a different treatment in this proposed revised guideline. In terms of phrasing, in chapter number 6, there is no longer reference to expression of interest, but rather to applications. And there are some concerns raised regarding GDPR and how it affects the publication of, for instance, the applications and the publication of the data related to the CCNSO funded travelers. In the version that was submitted to the council for approval, there were some additional chapters, 6.1, talking about CCNSO council members, 6.2, about a broader CCTLD community. Those were removed from the revised version. And then in the timeline, there are some changes as well. I remember when I made the redline version that there were some concerns on whether the changes indeed allows us to meet the deadline by ICANN constituency travel, which is 90 days ahead of the next ICANN meeting. That is when the names of the CCNSO funded travelers need to be submitted to ICANN constituency travel. So this is a hard deadline that definitely needs to be respected if we rephrase the wording in 6.3. Regarding the chapter 7, the application assessment and the decision-making process, there are several selection criteria which remained unchanged in the suggested changes. However, there was somewhere a reference that the application should be evaluated strictly based upon what has been submitted in the application by the person interested in receiving CCNSO travel support. And then the decision-making process, that was also rather edits in terms of the terminology or the words being used, but no fundamental changes there. Reporting on the decision-making process, again, more phrasing suggestions, no fundamental changes there. And that brings us to the end of the guideline. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joakim. Are there any questions? Yes, David.
Thanks, Katrina. Hello, everyone. This is David McCauley speaking. So a question for Joakim. I have read through this, and I don't remember seeing, Joakim, that if the committee chooses themselves to get travel funds, do they simply decide, or would the decision in those cases go to the council to be sort of ratified or something like that?
That is indeed a very good point, David. There is no reference to that particular scenario in the current version of the guideline, nor in the redline version, which Bart just shared in the chat.
Thank you. So anyway, it's David again. So that's confirms what I didn't find it either. And so maybe a suggestion would be that if the committee chooses themselves, that it be ratified by council or by some other mechanism. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, David. That's a really good point, especially taking into account that those are councillors who are on this travel funding committee. Stephen?
Hi there, Stephen Derhick for the record. If I read this correctly, there appears to be a subtle change from the current funding model, which is that currently, I believe, non-com appointees are always funded. And it looks like they've been lumped into the same funding pool as everyone else. And I'm wondering if my interpretation is correct and also whether we can do that. I don't know what the, is there any special status within ICANN rules and regs that I don't know about that with respect to non-com appointees and their funding. So just throwing that out there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen. As you remember, one of the points raised by Nigel was that the draft version that we proposed for comments and it was built on the same approach that the current, I will use the terminology, current guideline, the one that had been approved and the one we use currently. Draft, it's the first, the draft that we proposed, and we improved the guideline, well, improved as we hoped. And this redlined version, version submitted by Nigel to the CCNSO Council. So our draft was based on the same approach as in the current guideline, which is that yes, NOMCOM appointed councillors are always funded, and then councillors may apply to these the ones that are. And other councillors appointed by or selected elected by CCTRDs, they go to this the rest of the pool. As Nigel pointed out, that creates two sorts of councillors, non-com councillors and CCTRD elected councillors. And that's one of the things that he tried to eliminate by rewriting the guidelines. So that's one of the things that he did. But as you can see in Bart's note, NOMCOM appointees are funded through the ICON policy, which is, it definitely overrides anything that's written in CCNSO guidelines. And our guideline is the way that we, our internal procedure, how we allocate those slots that had been allocated to the CCNSO by this overall policy. Stephen, your hand is still up.
That's a new hand.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
So if I understand Bart's comment correctly, we still have to recognize the non-com appointees to council as a separate class with respect to funding. So it looks like we need to tweak that part of the travel guideline where they got lumped in with everybody else. Is that a correct interpretation? I'm not fussed one way or the other. I'm just trying to clarify things. Thank you.
Yeah, I understand that. And clarity is something that we clearly need here. Well, according to Bart, that's his interpretation. David's question was if that means that if there is a budget back, then NOMCOM folks will effectively get priority of sort slots. Yes, apparently that's the case. Well, according to the current policy, can we ask anyone else to interpret those? Maybe go to ICON Legal or somewhere else. Just to make sure that because according to the bylaws, I'm not sure that the bylaws speak about two classes, the ones that always do have. So there must be some other documents, and we can probably ask somebody to explain, and then we can go back to the council with this explanation.
Katrina, this is, I think the categorization of two classes is one that was framed by council, and I think say there is a difference between the NOMCOM and the CCTRD appointed or the CCTRD members appointed councillors by definition. Otherwise, you wouldn't have these two categories of councillors, and say the eligibility for travel funding is, I think, from an other point, say it's from an other dimensional order of magnitude than, for example, what's in the bylaws. And the funding policy has nothing to do with the bylaws. It's something that was made available by ICANN at an early stage and in early on only for non-con appointees, and later on it was extended and it became a, I would say, more a guidance for travel funding and for slots across SOs and ACs, and how the CCNSO internally does it is a choice of the CCNSO. The CCNSO has historically stated that, say, a number of slots are available for presenters and or working group chairs, those who are actively contribute to the work of the CCNSO, again, to distinguish from the fellowship program. And then the rest, and then for a few councillors, one per region on an ICANN basis. That started to shift or to change for various reasons, and then it became clear the number of slots has never been enough. And so there was this drive to extend the number of slots, which is 17 right now, so the same number as for next year as for this year. And in principle, all councils could be funded. But that's a choice of the council, just to fund itself or use it for other means as well.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Bart. Any other comments? Yeah, well, that is okay. I have, Christina asked, is there any information of priority to be given to the applicants depending on the location of the meeting in the travel funding guideline? No, it's just how they contribute to the work of the CCNSO. We do not do any other evaluation. Yeah, as you can see in the current draft, we propose a list of criteria to be used. None of them speaks about location. Any other comments, questions? Okay, so yeah, that's not entirely clear how to address this issue. Yes, if we look from this historical perspective, current the guideline that is currently in force speaks about three slots allocated to three non-com appointed councillors, five slots allocated to CCNSO elected, CCTLD elected councillors, one per region, but we have three per region, which means that not everyone who needs the funding may get it, and then also we need some slots for other people to support those active contributors. Cannot attend meetings otherwise. Yeah, so that's the current guideline speaks about these types of people that we can support. And yeah, I see Stephen has a hand up. Stephen, please go ahead.
Katrina, what's our path forward on this? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm trying to, you know, I'm kind of discussing it with myself and trying to find a way out of the situation. So first, can we agree on the interpretation that we need to allocate three slots to non-com appointed councillors?
I think we don't have a choice in that matter, so I think that's a given.
If that's a given, in that case, so we do have these two types of councillors, which means, okay, we go back to the fact that we have three slots allocated to non-com appointees per meeting. And then, in the current guideline, and that was slightly amended by a council's decision, current guideline kind of initially did not allow a counselor to get funding more than once a year. That was altered by the council as an interim solution prior to the new guidelines. So apparently we do not have, well, did not have that in our proposal. We did not have this a limitation anymore. Okay, if we go back to the redline version, so first, the easiest one is proposal to change funding to support. So I think we can support this one. That's the easiest one. So we support the change of this wording, which apparently means that we need to change the name of the committee as well and need to change their charter. I see David's, I hope, David, you can lead us out of this misery. David?
Thanks, Katrina. It's David McCullough again. I, as I listen to Bart and to Stephen, I tend to believe that with respect to the three dedicated funding slots for NOMCOM folks, that there's that's probably the case as they mentioned. However, I would be willing to try and go back and take a look at the bylaws and see if there's any wiggle room. And if we discovered any wiggle room, to then construct a question to send to ICANN Legal to confirm whether that's in fact the case. And so in other words, I'm not offering a solution here. I'm just offering a second look to see if there's any way we can work with this. I suspect that there's not, but it might be worth the effort, and I'd be happy to do it.
Yeah, David, thank you.
Katrina?
Yes, Bart, please.
David, I think you will, as far as I can tell from the bylaws, and I've read them a couple of times, nothing but respect to this, you will not find the answer in the bylaws. Say, this whole rule about non-com appointees, etc., is, first of all, is set through the ICANN travel policy. And that's the overarching document. So if you look at the allocation of travel funding is done through that policy. If you want to change it, you have to do it through that document because it's coming from ICANN org's funding, blah, blah, blah. And then, so that's where you have to look at. And maybe, and the unfortunate thing is that policy has not been updated for quite some time. So, going back to the travel funding is probably a good thing, and having check it again and whether my interpretation is correct. But I'd say this interpretation is based on past experience, and that's why I said in the bylaws you will not find this distinction between. Well, there is a distinction between NOMCOM and CCNSO members appointed councillors, but it's nothing to do with travel funding. So the framing as done with respect to travel funding is not based on the bylaws. So it's probably going back to the, the travel funding policy, which is under scrutiny anyway. And it is awaiting update. But that being said, and the second part that is related is probably going back to the NOMCOM and the expectations they set, because be aware, once you start changing this, is there will be the I don't know to what extent the NOMCOM selection process takes this into account. So probably there is this guarantee that NOMCOM councillors will receive travel funding, and that's already at the start of the call for volunteers, or when you get into the process. And there is this, and once we start changing this with respect to an internal guideline, that needs to be matched as well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm absolutely sure that the bylaws do not give in any details on how a slot should be allocated. It should look at any other policy documents. apparently I can travel policy. Okay, David, I see you want to say something again. Yeah, please.
Thanks. And I think Bart's points were all very good. My mistake on the bylaw, I'm so used to talking about IRP that everything's bylaw to me, but it's good to get back into a different discussion. So, Bart, could I ask you to do two things, or one thing? Could you post the link to the travel funding policy here or on the list? And then secondly, with respect to the comment on the call for volunteers for NOMCOM, et cetera, creating the expectation of having travel funds, I think that's a very good point. On the other hand, at some point, we need to take a look at it with a view to perhaps changing even that in the future. And the reason I say that is it's quite possible that someone chosen to the council through the NOMCOM process could, maybe this is unlikely, but could turn out to be simply unproductive or unengaged. And if that were the case, and somebody else in the community was really pitching in, I think we'd want to have the flexibility to do the travel funding a different way. So it's right that maybe we can't do that now, but maybe we ought to look at creating a path forward. Thanks, and thanks, Bart.
Okay, thank you. So from what we've discussed, I see several action points. So one is Bart finds a link to the document, travel policy or whatever, and shares it with the group. Second one, apparently David volunteered to look at those documents and see how they, if we meet all those requirements that are in this document, and how we can structure our guideline to make sure that we are still in line with all the requirements. Then I also heard that it's a good suggestion from David that we should address any conflicts of interest should they arise, meaning that the councillors who are on this travel funding or travel support committee, in case they need funding themselves, so how to address that. Here I propose that Joke, who is responsible for this, guideline, who knows everything around this travel and how a committee works, maybe you could propose some wording for that. Okay. So I hope that Joke's smiley means that she agrees with this this approach. Okay, so those three. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yes, when we have this one, I see another one. It's around this GDPR and those requirements. I'd say that if somebody applies, it's kind of a contract, and I cannot fulfill the contract without having those personal details. But all this publishing of the names and everything, we will need some advice or guidance, let's say, from ICANN org on how to address this one. Will the name still be published? I think this part was in the bylaws, wasn't it? About all the publishing. Yeah, anyhow, we will need any advice on this one. So how can we proceed with it?
Katrina?
Yes,
Bart. With the statements of interest from, say, which are used by the GNSO most, but also other communities use them, travel funding and making the names public is part of the general work that ICANN Legal is doing with respect to compliance to the GDPR. So my advice would be to give them some time and get back and see how it will be implemented, needs to be implemented. Note, this is part of, as ICANN is organizing this, making the money available, etc. It is an ICANN org thing ultimately, and we need to publish whether the names can be published, should be published, what can be published is they are working on it and is their concern. So Maybe so. What we'll do from staff end is monitoring in and check when and how it becomes applicable to the travel funding. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, for example, speaking about the question of if the applicant is employed, the name and email address of the employer needs to be included. I think that's fine with respect to the GDPR, because employer, that's if that's an email address, official email address used by the employer, so it should be fine. But the rest is still a question, and okay, that's good that this is something that we don't need to worry about. Let's wait for the outcome of the work carried out by ICANORG. Joachim?
Yeah, thank you, Katrina. Since you mentioned the question regarding who's your employer, the email address of the employer, I have been told by previous members of the CCNSO secretariat that this was introduced because sometimes travel funding was granted to a particular applicant, and then in the end, the applicant cancelled his participation in ICANN meeting because of a lack of approval from the employer, from the CCTLD manager, to indeed travel to the ICANN meeting. And that is unfortunate because the deadline to submit the name of the funded travelers is 90 days ahead of the meeting. And if there are cancellations afterwards, the slot is typically lost and cannot be assigned to another participant. Thank you.
No, the reason is perfectly clear and valid. Yes, it's horrible when you use a slot that could have been used for by any other CCTLD contributor. So yeah, it's good to have those to make sure that a person who applies for funding will really use it. So. No question about that. You're okay, unless you want to say anything else, please lower your head, hand, and we can move forward. Approval and rejection action guidelines, a never-ending story. Start reminding me of, I don't know, something Lord of the Rings or something similar, where we need to carry the ring. And finally, we cannot get rid of it. I really hope that we're very, very close to finalizing those two guidelines, because it'd be great if CCNSO Council could approve them this week. So, Stephen, may I ask for your input on this? So, you agreed to review both. Both guidelines to see how they look together and if we can move forward with them. Okay, your conclusions.
Thank you, Katrina. I love the analogy to Lord of the Rings, because we actually have about three or four more to go, which I won't even get into today. But I just want to warn everyone. So Katrina has asked me to provide an update on where we are with both the approval action guideline and the rejection action guideline. And we really need to get both of these before council for approval sooner rather than later. I've been revisiting both of them in preparation for the call. They both need a little bit of tweaking and revision, but there's nothing major in either one that needs to be changed. Certainly nothing like the travel funding guideline that we just reviewed. And given that where we are in the overall ICANN community in its annual cycle, I want to focus on the rejection action petition guideline today. I have to admit that before I dive into my remarks, I just want to admit to this group that I've been avoiding finalizing work on this, both of these guidelines, since we lost Ben, because he was my foil for the development of these guidelines. So it's been a little difficult getting back into them, but I've gotten back into them, and I apologize for my negligence in not really getting this wrapped up before now. That said, with regards to the rejection action petition guideline, it's likely going to be need to be put into place sooner than the approval action guideline. My takeaways from my recent review of it is we've got some formatting issues that need to be resolved, and I don't know whether they arise from the working group's use of Google Doc, which drives me crazy, or overall reliance on Microsoft Word or whatever. I'm not fussed about it because we'll get that sorted. The retirement PDP working group has taken a different approach to our document management, and it's looking like it's working out pretty well. And if it does work out as well as it appears to be working, I think I will propose that we adopt a similar approach with this group. Otherwise, overall, I think the content of the rejection action guideline is okay, with a couple of exceptions. I think we covered the table in section 6, that's called roles and responsibilities assignment, that big matrix, within the document. As I recall, Katrina sometime back said, let's do this, you know, checklist of who's got what responsibility when, section by section. And I thought that was a good idea. Whether we can capture the section by section stuff and summarize it in the back in section 6 or not, I don't know. I haven't really given that much thought. I like the section by section approach. I think it's sufficient. So I'm not sure whether section 6 should continue in the document. You know, if we've missed anything on in this regard, I'd appreciate it if somebody would speak up or throw it on the mailing list. Lastly, with regards to the two appendices included in the guideline, Appendix A is the glossary. Appendix B is a proposed rejection action certification checklist, designed to provide community members with a checklist of what they need to pull together should they wish to submit a rejection action petition. Excuse me. And let me address that petition certification checklist in some detail. The fact of the matter is, under what's written in Appendix D, any rejection action petition submitted by a community member must be related to a previously submitted public comment during the public comment period. And in the case of what's coming up, assuming the board adopts a budget on May 30th, it will be during the public comment period that, public comment period's closed already on this. So that window closed. Ignore all that. The fact of the matter is the empowered community administration needs a similar checklist, because if we receive, I'm speaking now with my ECA member hat on, a rejection action petition from a community member, an SOAC, it has to meet this criteria. So I need to develop this for the ECA, and when I do, which will be shortly, my plan is to steal it and incorporate it into the guideline. And we're nearing the window where this actually might be required, because once the board adopts the budget, I believe it's going to be May 30th, we've got a 21-day window that opens where people can, community members can file rejection action petitions for consideration by the SOAC leadership. So I can steal this from the ECA work and drop that in quite nicely. The glossary is another issue. It's been in development for a while. I actually have one out there in circulation, but it hasn't been recirculated recently, and I need to go back and revisit that. The glossary applies to both the approval action guideline and the rejection petition guideline, and it will likely apply to the follow-on guidelines as well. And so the question I've got going is, do we develop separate glossaries for each guideline, or do we develop a single glossary of terms as a separate document and have the various guidelines reference it? And if we do decide to have a single unified glossary, do we maintain it as a separate guideline-like document, or instead maintain it in some other form, such as a wiki page? And after discussing this with Katrina last week, I've come around to her idea of having it exist as a wiki page. I really like that idea because we can just continually update it as we go along without having to formalize adoption and council consideration and all that wah-wah. So I'm wondering what your thoughts on about that, but I think it's a good idea to do it as a wiki, as a living document, basically. With regards to the rejection action guideline, actually with regards to both of them, I think my proposal is that we accept the changes pending for both guidelines in their totality, clear out the comments and start with, you know, clean documents, adopt the red line, the changes and all that stuff, because there's not very much in either one. Based on what I saw in my review. And if we just say, yeah, let's go with that. Let's go with what we've got there now moving forward. I think that's the way to go. Assuming this meets with approval, I will then go ahead and rework the back end of the rejection action guideline to reference a wiki page glossary if we think that's the way we want to go. This will result in dropping Appendix A, then Appendix B becomes Appendix A, and Appendix B will be filled in when I steal from the ECA the rejection action petition checklist that I have to develop for them. And that should complete the rejection action petition. And my approach going forward with regards to the group's approval of the rejection action petition, if this meets your approval, is to notify you guys when it's ready to go for review, and leave it open for review by the GRC membership on the list for a week or so, with you guys posting comments, concerns, etc. on the list. And I would then further propose, if this meets with the group's approval, that in the absence of any strenuous objection at the conclusion of this review period, that we could say, yes, we tacitly approve it, and the GRC then thus passes this rejection action petition on to council for its review at its May teleconference. And I need to get to work on this week and get this going to a point, get this set to a point where it can be posted to the list saying, okay, here it is, and it's what I consider its final form. You guys take a look at it for a week. Because we really need to get this before council at its May meeting, which is the third Thursday in May. So it's coming up shortly. So I need to get to work on it. Would like to do the same approach with the approval action guideline, but it's not as critical, time critical, as rejection action guideline is. But I'd certainly like to have the approval action guideline to a point where the GRC has approved it and pushed it on to council by the Panama meeting. I think that's about it for me on this one. So as you've heard, the timeline with regards to rejection action petition is rather tight. I need to get to work on it immediately. So I'll be playing with that this week in a major way. And I think that's it, Katrina. I turn it back to you.
Thank you very much. I remember we discussed the formatting of the document when I submitted it to the council and for public comments. And we came to a conclusion that that was your Mac. And there was, in fact, everything was fine with the formatting. And now when you say that there's still... There are still some problems. I'm getting worried. Which version did you use for this final review?
This is the version I pulled off the wiki. It's draft version 5. And the table of contents has an error in it, for example.
No, it was version 6 that we sent to the supposed to be version 6. Yeah, well, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, send me your red line version. I will see how it fits into the latest draft gun, the one that we sent to the community. That was version 6, February 2018, and it was sent to the community for comments. Okay, while you try to...
That's not the one on the wiki, so send me what you have. And
it's
not major.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, with regard to questions to the community, does that... I see David's got his hand up. So let's ask David what he thinks of this insanity I've just proposed. David, go ahead.
Thanks, Stephen. It's David McCauley speaking. And thank you for your work to the new members. I would just mention that Stephen has been leading our effort through empowered community issues as indicated in Annex D to the bylaws, and it's a real complex thicket, difficult stuff. So thanks, Stephen. I like all of what you proposed. I like the fact that maybe, and subject to what you and Katrina were just talking about formatting, but if we could get a clean document to go from now, I think we've agreed largely on the approach, and I think a clean document would do well. I also like the idea of a single glossary on a wiki page. Hopefully the glossary will be consistent for all of the actions. If it's not, then I think we have another problem and need to make that clear somehow. With respect to section 6, I'll take a look at it. I can't answer that part now, but I'm interested in what the retirement PDP is doing on document management, because this is my personal opinion, Google Docs is just frustrating once there's more than two people working on a document. It just becomes like a Christmas tree of comments and changes, and it's just, if there's anything better, Microsoft Word I find better, but if there's anything that the retirement PDP is doing that makes sense, I'd certainly be willing to listen to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. We're still in the early stages of the PDP work, and we're driving everything off of mind maps that Bart's been producing, and we're generating text out of that. And based on comments put into the mind map, so we can outline the mind map into text, and this gets fed into magical systems, cauldrons of bubbling stuff that the vice chair of the working group has going, and he produces beautiful documents that have line numbers, as you see typically in legal documents, and it makes things really nice to be able to refer specifically to line numbers when you're discussing text. And it's a little complicated yet, but when we get the hang of it, I will plan to introduce it. I agree with you with regards to your comments of frustration with Google Docs. I share them. In any event, that's where we are with that. As that proceeds a bit, I will share it, come back and share it with the community. That's not me typing for a change. Anybody
no, it's
else?
Me. It was me.
Well, yeah, birds sound much better. Bird sounds are much better. Okay, so thank you. Thank you. And Stephen, I just forwarded the correct documents to you.
Okay.
Have a look and...
Thank you. But are we generally then in agreement that we should start clean document, except the outstanding changes, which were very trivial in my book, and then I can move forward on this?
Yes. Let's move forward. We really need to.
I've got to get this done this week.
Yes, Bart.
Could you? Maybe that's the easier way, because then you can easily include line numbers. If you could download it or put it into a Word document, and we say for this finalization, we do not use Google Docs but Word documents, then we can add.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Because I'm not going to reformat it again. It's in Word format. I forwarded it to Stephen. Stephen will have a look.
Yeah, because then you can add line numbers already. That's fairly easy if you want to add line numbers, as Stephen suggested.
With regards to this document at this stage in its development, I don't think they're actually going to be necessary because we're only going to be tweaking the back end, I think. But going forward, to answer David's broader question, as we develop new guidelines, it might be useful, certainly early, as we, you know, Bart, as you've seen, in the PDP working group, it's useful to have line numbers as you're beginning to discuss things. We're fairly far along. I'm not sure line numbers at this point are necessary, but I think
at a discussion phase, they're very easy because then if people prepare and look at the document, the references to the page and line number, then it makes it very easy to check and to focus, also to present, etc. I fully agree.
Thank you. Yeah. I think that's it from me, Katrina. If there's any objections from the group to this proposed way forward with the rejection action guideline, I'm happy to entertain them. Otherwise, I will assume this is the way we can go forward. And I will be diligent on this week and get it to a point where it's back up and open for commentary on the list as soon as possible so that we can get this before council at its May meeting, because it really needs to be addressed by council at its May meeting and put out to the community.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And our May meeting is on 24th, right?
Third Thursday, I think that sounds right.
Yes, so which means that it needs to be sent to the council on 17th. So that's in 10 days from now.
All right. Katrina, I commit publicly to having it available a week before that, so it can be reviewed by the committee GRC for a week.
So, which means this Thursday.
Yes. So I will be back in the saddle on this thing. I'm sorry, I've just haven't been able to deal with it for a while.
Okay, so look at the document. I sent, everything must be fine with formatting there, especially if you look at on your Windows computer. Not sure about Mac. Anyhow, let's move forward with that one. And hope that Kim will make a wiki page for this glossary where we will put everything related to any guidelines. I didn't hear any objection to this idea either, which means that again we can move forward with that. Okay, sounds like a plan.
It does. I have your latest.
Yep.
Latest
excellent
draft. So here it is. So I will work off of that. Thank you, guys. That's it from me, I think.
Okay. Thank you. Now we're already on the top of the hour. Have any other business? I had one thing I wanted to propose as exercise for our new members, meaning that as you may know, there was a cross-community working group on internet governance. They kept an eye on everything that's going on internet governance arena in the world. The problem is that GNSO, they withdraw their participation as a charting organization in this cross-community working group because they believe that that's not the right vehicle for the work. So they have restructured their charter, and now they want to be engagement group, not cross community working group. Because cross community working group is a special some requirements that they need to meet. So they decided to call themselves engagement group, and they have a charter. So I wanted to propose that our new members have a look at the charter and see what they think, what they would like to see from the charter. Well, personally, I think it, for example, if they speak about scope, they talk also about objectives. And when they talk about objectives, they speak also about, some other things. So personally, I feel that the document is not, the content does not correspond to the structure, let's say, to the titles of the they use in the document. So my idea was to give this to you as an exercise and wait for your feedback. So what are your thoughts? So Christina, Sveta, Sean, would you like to go forward with the exercise? This is not our document, but the CCNSO is involved currently with the cross-community working group as one of the chartering organizations left. So we'll have to also give some feedback on the new charter. Since this is absolutely, it's not related to any of our documents, you can look at it as a standalone document. Probably it might be easier. At the same time, this is something that you use to see how it looks when you look. Yeah, I will send the document so you can have a look and then, exactly. It probably will not help you to understand more about the CCNSO, but it will definitely understand help you to understand how to work with the documents and how to rewrite them and what to look for, let's say. Okay, I'll send the document and you take your time to look at it and your feedback will be very important to us.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, okay, so thank you very much. Anything else, any other business? If not, our next call is on 21st of May. It's in 2 weeks, so we meet every 2 weeks. We try to meet at the same time. Okay, so if no other comments, nothing, then thanks a lot for joining the call. Thank you for participation in all the...
Katrina.
Yes, Bart, yes, please.
I believe the 21st is a public holiday.
Where? Definitely not in my part of the world.
It is. The 20th, and I think it's called Whit Monday.
Well, not for us.
It's Victoria Day in Canada.
As the 10th is Ascension Day, and the 20th and the 21st are public holiday.
Jesus, people, do you ever work? Okay, well, I shouldn't be complaining. Last week we had only 2 working days. So, okay, you should take some time to rest as well.
No,
okay.
I don't mind, but I say some people will not be able to attend, but I just wanted to remind you that's one of the public holidays.
So,
we go for the 21st.
We go for the 21st or we go to the 28th?
28th. If you go for the 21st, you will have at least 1 or 2 more meetings before the Panama meeting. If you go for the 28th, it's limited to 1.
I will not be able to make it on the 4th.
Then we go for the... You won't? Then we go for the 28th. Let's go for the 28th. It will provide everybody some more time to deal with the documents as well.
Yes, but we still have to submit the rejection.
Yeah. We need to do that anyway for that time.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you very much and see you in 3 weeks then.
Yeah.
Okay. 28th.
Bye-bye. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye all.